It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry Gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
And welcome to a special Red Sox baseball playoff edition of The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan as we sum up Game 3 of the Division Series and look ahead to today's Game number 4. Appreciate joining us for the program. This segment of it brought to you by Revision Energy. What can sunshine do for you? Encourage you to check out the local solar professionals at Revision Energy at revisionenergy.com. Well, the Boston Red Sox were pretty much dead, it seemed. They were destroyed, to put it plainly, in games 1 and 2 of the Division Series in Houston. They lost both games 8-2. They came to Fenway Park and were looking to stave off elimination and fell behind 3-0 as Doug Fister came out and got knocked around, gave up a 2-run home run to Carlos Correa, gave up a run after the first two batters of the game, came out for the second inning, allowed 2 base runners, and that was it for him. And for the first time at that point, the Red Sox got some stability, it seemed like, in this series. When Joe Kelly came out of the pen, he came in through scoreless inning and 2/3. He got some help from Mookie Betts and a fabulous catch off of a ball hit by Josh Reddick, which was ticketed for the right field seats. Mookie came back, was calm, clear, collected, and robbed a 3-run home run over that short fence as he went into the stands to make the play, leaning into the stands, not full-on into the stands. It made a really nice catch, which robbed a 3-run home run and gave the Red Sox some momentum after the strong pitching performance, a catch, and allowed the team to go to work in the second inning. Now, they only scored one run, making the game 3-1 at that point, as Sandy Leon had an RBI single to start the scoring, but that's where things began for the Red Sox there in the second inning, where they went to work, they grinded, they had some base runners, they left the bases loaded, but ended up scoring one run that inning, and then in the third is where they really went to work. 2 outs after strikeouts to Benintendi and Betts, Mitch Moreland a double to straightaway center field, Hanley Ramirez a double after that to drive home Moreland, and then Rafael Devers with a 2-run home run to right center field. That put the Red Sox up 4-3. It was the first time they had led in 5 playoff games over the last 2 years. So that was a different feel for them. And then David Price came in and stabilized the game with four innings of shutout relief for the Boston Red Sox. The game was a nail-biter. The final score 10-3, but the game was an intense nail-biter, really from the start of the game on, particularly, you know, the 4th, 5th, and 6th, and 7th when Price is pitching, because you're wondering, okay, how is this going to end? How many innings is John Farrell going to want from Craig Kimbrell? Who's going to bridge to Kimbrell? But the Red Sox answered those questions with a huge 7th inning in which they scored 6 runs. Hanley Ramirez again with a big double. He had 2 RBIs on that one. Devers with a nice piece of hitting out to right to left field to score another run. And then Jackie Bradley Jr. with a 3-run home run, which was a aided home run by Josh Reddick. As Reddick was going over to make the play on the ball, it hit the heel of his glove and bounded into the stands on the right field line for a 3-run home run. That put the Red Sox up 10-3, so you didn't have to worry about how the Red Sox were going to maintain the slimmest of leads through the 8th and 9th innings, as the Red Sox went on to win this one 10-3. Here's Red Sox manager John Farrell, first on the atmosphere at Fenway Park, which was amazing. The place was electric. They wanted to see more baseball in this contest today. They wanted to see their team get a win, and it was a very supportive and very energetic crowd.
The crowd just does energize us. We felt coming back home to play in front of this crowd, to play back here where we're most comfortable and have won a lot of games. That started to turn it.
It did, and the offense getting going really, I think, lifted a huge burden off of this team's shoulders. Having Hanley hit in this game, Mitch Moreland come through, Rafael Devers come through, and then David Price keeping the line clean for four innings.
I mean, they changed the momentum before I came in, you know, with the hits we had. I think in the third inning, you know, Devers with that big hit, Hanley, you know, one of his four. You know, our offense, you know, they responded back.
Here's Hanley Ramirez on Price's performance.
It doesn't surprise me. I know David. You know, he's a machine. He's a competitor. And, you know, when he's in the mound, he's going to give you everything he has. You know, that's him. That's his attitude. And, you know, that's why he's here.
Red Sox center fielder Jackie Bradley Jr. has had a good last couple games. He had two RBI singles back in game number two to account for those two runs and the three-run aided home run in game number three, which really gave the Red Sox some breathing room and solved the questions as to who was going to do what in relief in game number three.
Yeah, we got a tough road ahead of us, but you know, we're ready to take on that challenge. We're ready to prove that it's not over. Is it going to be hard? Yes. Are we up for the challenge? Absolutely. And that was pretty much the gist with a lot of other stuff.
You mentioned the road is still tough, but does the road go downhill after a win like this, or do you think it's still, the challenge is still pretty significant?
We got to win. We lose, we're gone. How's it downhill?
You have a minute.
We got to win. That's all there is to it. Continue to win and continue to live to fight another day.
Do you find yourself kind of mapping out the game too, like playing along, like, okay, what's going to be the seventh or eighth or ninth, or do you just kind of?
Nah, I don't map it out. That's not my job. My job is to just do my job, and that's not part of it.
Like, in the terms of the big picture, kind of outside just the scope of this series, the upward trajectory of this team, what does this win do as compared to, you know, what the alternative was, kind of in terms of the continuing on the path that you guys want to continue on, big picture?
Big picture is it allows us to play tomorrow. And we got to win tomorrow. There was no, the only other alternative was losing, and then season's over. And we feel like we've worked too hard to just be able to, you know, go home after three. Obviously, we want to continue to keep playing great baseball, and we want to extend this thing.
Is there something about these moments that allows for, you know, this team to do its best work, whether it's late in games or in extra innings, or it seems like whenever you have the utmost adversity is when kind of this team goes to work?
We just don't give up. Yeah. And that's what it all boils down to.
David Price, of course, was the key on the offensive side of things. Mookie Betts with a great catch to rob a three-run home run from Josh Reddick. It was another key in the second inning. But Hanley Ramirez going 4-for-4 in the game with three RBIs, another big key for Boston. Talked to Xander Bogaerts about that.
How much different is this team when Hanley hits like that?
That's Hanley being Hanley, you know. He's locked in right now. He's been so pretty much towards the end of the season, and it's huge to have him come up big like that for us.
I think Nunez starting over him in game one kind of lit a fire under it. Do you think it was already something that was going?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, if you look at his track record, he's a pretty great player, you know, so I wouldn't say that.
Given how resilient this team has been in the extra inning games and everything, is it kind of ironic that you get taken to kind of the edge here in this game and then come alive?
I mean, it was good to win, man. It was good to win. We were down 0-2. So for us, the win was huge. I mean, we had a crowd going. We were down three runs. We could have easily just threw in the game, but I don't think that's the type of team that we are. So we just continue to battle until we find a way.
How important was that one win for this group? If you'd gotten swept twice in a row,
We did it now, so don't say that. It was a great win, man. One that we needed. Looking forward to tomorrow. We'll see what time we'll play. That'll be determined later. But just a win for us right now was huge. That can change a lot of stuff.
Yeah, the Red Sox did have to wait on the Yankees to see what they were going to do in their game against the Indians, and they found out that the Yankees won 1-0. Greg Bird hit a home run off of Andrew Miller, Masahiro Tanaka, as well as Aroldis Chapman. Phenomenal for the Yankees as the Yankees win 1-0, forcing game four in that series, which means the Red Sox play at 1 o'clock today at Fenway Park instead of at 7 o'clock if the Yankees had lost. So Red Sox back early at the ballpark today, getting ready for this game number 4 of the American League Division Series. And he may get forgotten a little bit in the mix, but Sandy Leon, a big part in this game as well. He was 2-for-4, and he got things started with the RBI single in the second inning. Here's the Red Sox catcher.
What, in your view, has made David Price so effective in this role? Is it the mentality? Is it the stuff? Is it a combination?
I mean, it was really impressive. It was working with all these pitchers, was getting ahead of the count, making pitches even behind the count too. Coming from the bullpen, throwing 4 games, I think that's like MVP candidate for me. Just trying to, he kept the game close, you know. So we scored some runs and then we won the game, bro. It was impressive.
It seemed like everything just kind of clicked at the right time, whether it was, you know, the offense getting going, Hanley with the hit, Rafael Devers, you had a big hit to get things going with it, and then Price solidifies the pitching, which had been obviously, you know, problematic throughout the course of the series. It just seems like everything kind of clicked at one time. Is there anything you could point to as to, you know, why it just kind of all came together at once, or is that just baseball?
I mean, that's all about just playing as a team, you know, just trying to help every guy, trying to help, I mean, each other, just trying to do whatever we can to help the team to win the game. Can be defense, can be catching the fly ball like Mookie did, mm-hmm. can be hitting through a homer like Jackie. Hanley went 4-for-4 with 3 RBIs, Price through 4 innings. For me, that's MVP right there, Price, through doing that.
Yeah, so I mean, Price really solidified the game and kept the line close and kind of, you know, gave you guys a sense of calm, I think, on the offensive side, that you could go to work and everything was, you know, set and stable. And obviously the hitting came along with that.
Yeah, score. It gave us a chance to keep the game close so we can score some runs. And he did that. I mean, through 4 innings, the amazing job. It was impressive. I mean, coming from the bullpen, do that kind of job is really good.
You're listening to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Special Red Sox playoff edition of the show, as it's game 4 today between the Red Sox and the Houston Astros. Red Sox still trailing this series 2-1. And the topic of momentum in postseason baseball is always an interesting one. We got into it a little bit there earlier with Jackie Bradley Jr. I mean, do the Red Sox have momentum right now? The answer is yes, sort of. The saying goes that momentum is as good as the next day's starting pitcher, and that's true. But the Red Sox offense right now, which, you know, kind of comes and goes, we saw during the course of the season, they have had a lot of pressure taken off of them with the performance that they had yesterday. So to have guys hitting, to have some confidence, to have some clear head, to take some pressure off of them going into game number 4, I think puts the offense at a good spot. But I mean, it's going to come down to how Rick Porcello pitches today for the Boston Red Sox. What is he going to give them? Is he going to give them the first good start they've gotten during the course of this series? Is Chris Sale going to have to come in and bail him out early on? That's going to be the question. I think that the Red Sox are looking for 5 solid innings from Rick Porcello today. They like more, but 5 solid innings will be good enough. And then you go to Sale, and then you go to Kimbrel. And I think that that's what the Red Sox are looking for in this game number 4. And then, you know, hand over to Drew Pomerantz, and all hands are on deck in game number 5, having won 2 games in a row going to Houston. The Astros are a really, really good team. There's no question about it. On paper, they're probably the better team in this series. But this is baseball. You can find ways to win. It's a funny game. There's a lot of things that don't come into play in terms of percentages and so forth that you don't necessarily see in the other sports. And the Red Sox can find a way to win this series. I don't think there's any question about it. And they do have momentum on their side at this point. But that momentum can be quelled by a poor performance from Rick Porcello or a really good performance from Charlie Morton today on the hill for the Houston Astros. Do more on this series when we return. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Dallas Keuchel is the Game 2 starter to Houston Astros. He has some tremendous insight on pitching and also the Red Sox offense that he'll share with us in the next segment of the program. Also, we'll talk with Rafael Devers through his interpreter in just a little bit here on the program as well. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show presented by Revision Energy. Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you'll make is who your lawyer will be. We encourage you to check out nhlawoffice.com to learn more about the Concord-based firm. Appreciate joining us for the program as we go deep into the Red Sox division series against the Houston Astros. And, you know, one of the big stories for the Red Sox this year has been the emergence of Rafael Devers, the 20-year-old third baseman who's still a little rough around the edges out in the field, but has shown a prolific bat, and it was on display in Game 3 of this series with a home run which gave the Red Sox their first lead in the postseason in the last 2 years in five contests. And Devers is an individual who's kind of following the path of a lot of key Red Sox prospects who have played roles for this team in postseason runs. Kevin Youkilis had some time to shine for the 2004 Red Sox, 2007 Jacoby Ellsbury in his rookie campaign, and of course 2013 Xander Bogaerts was a standout during the Red Sox World Series run, and last year Andrew Benintendi making his debut in postseason play, and this year it's Rafael Devers. So I talked with Devers through his interpreter, Davison Perez, at Fenway Park about what he's learning through the postseason, what he's learned his first year in the big leagues, and how he hopes it helps him moving forward for the 20-year-old who looks like he's going to have a very promising career in Boston.
What's the experience been like for you? What have you gained from being part of the playoffs this year, and the biggest takeaways from?
Y nada, contento por estar aquí, vamos a tratar. Y nada, vamos a seguir jugando para ver qué pasa mañana y pasa mañana. Vamos a tratar de ganar el primer juego mañana.
It feels good to be here. Learned a lot and just looking forward to playing tomorrow's game, hopefully getting a W and continuing on with the season.
What has been the value in his view of having all these learned experiences at the age of 20, and how does he see those experiences benefiting him, you know, down the line, as opposed to, you know, going on kind of a usual process through the minor leagues and spending a lot of time in various minor league cities?
Del mundo y nada, y uno solamente mirando el dogado, y cuando uno está jugando uno aprende mucho también. Trato de aprender lo más que puedo.
This has been a great experience for me, being able to watch the best baseball in the world be played, and, you know, just soaking up all I can, whether that be sitting on the bench or playing in the game, and it's one that I don't take for granted.
Who have been the guys that he's leaned on the most, and what has he learned from them about being a professional and excelling at this level?
Con Núñez, todos estamos aquí mismo, y siempre me dice que me da consejo de todo lo que pasa en el juego, que disfrute, que eso es la misma pelota que playoff, pero que disfrute, que si uno disfruta, uno todo le va a salir bien con Dios delante.
You know, I've been talking a lot to Núñez. We have lockers right next to each other, and he's basically just been telling me that this is something that you have to have fun with. It's the same baseball as yeah, I've always played, and the best thing to do is just have fun with it. And just because it's the postseason doesn't mean that anything changes. And if you're having fun, then everything's going to go out the way that you want it to.
Well, that is Rafael Devers and Davison Perez, his interpreter, here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show, again, brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey and NH Law Office. com. Had an opportunity to sit down on the workout day on Saturday with Dallas Keuchel after his start against the Red Sox in game number two of this series. He went 5 2/3 and gave up a run against the Boston Red Sox, and got his thoughts on, you know, pitching in the postseason pressure, and also this Red Sox lineup. Very interesting interview, as Keuchel is one of the really good interviews in the game. Provides a lot of insight and analysis. Hopefully you'll enjoy this interview with Dallas Keuchel, the bearded lefty for the Houston Astros.
First two games of the series, was there a surprise on your part about the way that this team was able to go out and execute the way that you were against the Red Sox? Or is there, you know, expectation about how good this team is?
No, I mean, we had played well all year, and when you get to see different guys do really special things, it becomes of no surprise when guys are able to do what they've done so far. And I mean, we got a long ways to go and still got, you know, one more win, but this is a quality ball club over here, and we're not taking anything for granted. So we're just having fun, and that's what the experience of getting of 2015 is all about, and we're putting it to good use.
That's what it seems like. This is a club that has fun, and you see it a lot on teams that have success where they're able to kind of, you know, take the pressures and push those to the side and just create an environment where they're able to continue the regular season. Because basically the postseason is completely different than the regular season, where every game matters. In the regular season, it's, oh, yeah, it's just one game. We'll move on to the next one. How are you able to create that mindset where you're not in an environment where you're, you know, pressing because of what each playoff moment means?
Well, I think, like I mentioned, just the wild card game in 2015 was a lot of guys' first real experience with the win or go home type of atmosphere. So when we got a five-game series, it seems like an eternity because mm-hmm. everything is it goes so slow, and it's like so much more methodical than going to New York and playing a one-game wild card game and of that nature. But everybody just literally doesn't ever hit the panic button, and that's what you don't need to do when you're on your good ball club and you know you have the ability to either come out hot or come from behind. So it's a great baseball club, and they know that.
You're one of my favorite pitchers to watch because this is an era of obviously seeing guys throw 100 miles an hour. The fans get the oohs and the ahs when they see it hit the radar gun that high. But you were able to consistently, probably as good if not better than anybody else, get weak contact. Your exit velocity is the best in baseball. How do you do it, and how do you, you know, who did you admire in terms of kind of building Dallas Keuchel?
I've been a fan of a lot of guys, and one of the coolest things is just to get to watch different guys, and that's why baseball is so great, because you don't always have to have the best stuff or the highest velocity or be the biggest guy on the field. And so when you can try to nitpick and get bits and pieces from a lot of different guys and try to culminate into yourself, that's what I try to do. My favorite pitcher growing up was John Smoltz, mm-hmm. who's nothing like me, stature-wise, velocity-wise, anything like that, but just his demeanor on the mound, the way he repeated his mechanics, the way he transferred from being a really good starter to injury, to post-injury closer, to one of the best closers, mm-hmm. And then back to starting, it's something I admired. But then I also like Tom Glavin, Greg Maddux, Roger Clemens, Andy mm-hmm. Pettit, a bunch of guys. I love watching Kluber. I love watching Verlander pitch, Peacock pitch, and a lot of guys. So my development is still ongoing, and that's the best part about it, is that until I can't pitch anymore, I'm still going to try to develop into different little different aspects of my game. But it pitching is all about deception, and if I can get the pitch to move really late, that's what I want. I don't want the pitch to move a ton. I want the hitter to feel like, hey, he's got my number. But then at the end of the at bat, he's rolling over or he's striking out mm-hmm. in three or four pitches, and that's it. And I want him to say, I can't wait to face him again, because that gives him a vote of confidence to where the next at bat he's even more aggressive than he was before, and then I take more advantage of it.
Out of the pitchers that you mentioned, I'd say that the easiest comparison to make would be between you and Andy Pettit. Both throw, you know, similar in terms of velocity, and both have, you know, tremendous amounts of conviction with their pitches. But generally, you know, when pitchers talk about conviction, they're talking about velocity. How do you gain, you know, that conviction with each pitch? Is it kind of the narrative that you mentioned before, where, you know, you're going to create an environment for that hitter?
Yeah, I mean, different guys have different definitions of conviction. I just feel like that conviction to me is knowing your game plan and knowing what you want to do each and every pitch. And if I don't feel comfortable with the pitch that's put down or a pitch I don't want to throw, I'll step off and regroup. We'll talk about it, me and McCann or me and Gaddy, and, mm-hmm. and we'll go about it again. So conviction to me is knowing exactly what you want to do on each and every single pitch.
When you look at the lineups in baseball, and concluding, do you see your lineup as being, from a pitcher's perspective, the most difficult to pitch against? Obviously, the Indians have a tough lineup. There's a lot of, even the Orioles have a really good lineup in the AL East. But is this Astros lineup, the most difficult to pitch against? And what do you look at when you see them?
I would 100% say it'd be top three. I don't think we're the most knowledgeable group, but I think we're the most talented group, mm-hmm. one to nine. And when you have talent like we do, it's hard to navigate through a couple hitters trying mm-hmm. to get to the bottom of the order, because the bottom of the order is Marwin Gonzalez right now. Mm-hmm. He's
a season average of 300+. Mm-hmm. Then you got Yuli, you got McCann, who's a career 270, 280 guy, maybe 260, but he's had 20+ home runs. Mm-hmm. 11 out of 12 years he's been in the big leagues. So there's really no soft spot to kind of let your guard down and be like, okay, I know I have a great chance of getting this guy out if I can get around these two guys. I would honestly say the Red Sox are probably the most knowledgeable group of mm-hmm. hitters, and that's saying something even without Big Poppy in the lineup this mm-hmm. year. And what he brought, his knowledge of the game, not only him but the coaching staff, they do a good job of getting guys ready for game plans. And their game plan against me was literally look over the plate, try to get me to throw strikes, and if I'm not throwing strikes, they're in the hitter's counts. They're mm-hmm. in 2-0 counts, 2-1 counts, where they have a better chance of putting hard contact in play. And thankfully, I made an adjustment, but I commend them for their game plan. And I think a lot of that has to do with Pedroia and a couple other guys.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the lineup, and they grind, and they have that going for them, obviously. But as you mentioned, there is that one bat that seems to be missing, that one or two guys in the middle of the lineup that's going to make you pay with the home run ball when you are have a couple guys on base, so you are getting behind in the count.
Yeah, and that's the whole key is in baseball you have opportunities. The most relevant in the playoffs is always going to be the two-strike hit or the right. Two-run homer, because if you give up solo home runs, especially right now in the playoffs, there's a lot of runs being scored mm-hmm. so far. Previous years it seems like the runs are at a premium mm-hmm. and you give up a solo home run, that's not going to beat you. But the two-run homer, the three-run homer, or a couple two-out knocks—that's what's going to kill you. And it does seem like they're lacking that big thump in the lineup at the four hole. And that just means that Big Poppy was a huge part of the Red Sox team, and he was the heart and soul, which he was. And that just means he is really, really good.
Yep.
But I think they're just as good as last year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard for guys on a team to really think that way when you have such an icon in a lineup mm-hmm. that's not there.
Dallas, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Dallas Keuchel right there. Really interesting interview with him. Also, the Houston Astros have a bit of a New England baseball legend in George Springer, their center fielder. Grew up, born in Connecticut, went to Avon Farms, watched the Red Sox there, then went on to UConn, played baseball for the Huskies as well. So he's got a bit of a following in New England, particularly in the state of Connecticut. And we talked with George Springer about this Houston Astros ball club.
He's joined by George Springer, one of the top players in baseball this year. And it seems like the thing that jumps out most about you guys is that you look up and down the lineup, the bullpen, the intangibles. This team does pretty much everything well. Is that a fair assessment? Is this team just very well balanced and there's not really seeming to be a lot of weaknesses?
I think so. You know, it's you know, from top to bottom in our lineup, a lot of guys can do a lot of different things. And it allows a lot of guys to be able to be themselves. You know, they've got guys that, you know, can hit for power, hit for contact, you know, hit for average, you know, all that stuff. But our team is very well balanced, you know, and we balance each other out. You know, our staff's been great all year, you know, from the starters all the way to the bullpen. You know they all pitch the same way. You know, our team plays the same way. You know, every guy is going in the same direction, which I think is even bigger than, you know, the physical talent on this team.
It's amazing to see, you know, how top-heavy baseball is now. And there's, you know, just 5 years ago, there's incredible parity where there wasn't a lot of separation between teams. But now it seems like the Indians, you guys, the Red Sox to a lesser degree, look at the amount of teams with 100 wins, and there are a lot of really good teams in baseball. So it's going to be a difficult October, obviously, for everybody.
Yeah, you know, there's, you know, if you're in the postseason, you know, you've earned it, so you know you've obviously done something right. And you know, as it comes to the Red Sox, the Indians, you know, the Twins, and New York, whoever it is, you know, it's going to be a good team. And every good team does something better than the other team. So you know, it's all about trying to figure out, you know, how to beat the other team and kind of just playing the same game, but necessarily trying to beat them at their own game at the same time.
Obviously, you grew up in Connecticut. Do you feel comfortable here at Fenway Park? You always seem to hit well. You've had, you know, some good series here in the past. Is this a place that you feel you're kind of at home?
I guess this is about the close I ever get to playing, you know, close to Connecticut. I like playing here. It's I mean, you know, how could you not? You know, I love playing here. It's fun. You know, it's a great atmosphere to play in. You know, you're obviously playing a good team, so it's fun for me. I just kind of enjoy every day.
Justin Verlander's acquisition was one of the more interesting ones at the deadline, because, you know, it was one of those cases where the rich got richer. You didn't necessarily need Justin Verlander, but since he's been here, he has taken things obviously to a different level, and he has made this team so much better, it seems.
I think we needed exactly him. Okay. You know, our team, you know, it's just, he works with us. You know, he fits in perfectly. You know, he's won 6 games on his own, you know, where it's, and you know, he's been a huge part of our last 20 games, and I'm glad he's here. You know, I hated facing him, but you know, he adds experience, he adds leadership, and he's just a competitor, man. He brings it every time he pitches, and it's awesome to see.
And there's always that debate, you know, how much a pitcher, particularly a starting pitcher, affects, you know, position players. But him with, and you see it with Chris Sale on the Red Sox side too, with his demeanor, his approach, his mentality, and you mentioned, you know, the experience. He's been there before. A lot of you guys, you know, haven't been there before at the level that he has. That seems like that type of a mentality that he has can be infectious.
Oh yeah, you know, he competes. You know, he goes out there and you know, he shows you why he's been so successful his whole career. And you know, this is the best I've ever seen him. You know, I've had the, I don't want to say pleasure, but the
you faced him.
Yeah, I've faced faced him for 4 years, and he's a tough AB every time. And you know, he's a great teammate, but he's an even better competitor. And it's awesome to know. You know, he's going to get the ball and he's going to shut the other team down.
When, you know, Jeter and Ortiz and other guys retired, people wondered, you know, what the future of baseball is going to be. And it seems like, you know, it's guys like you and Altuve and Mookie Betts, guys that can do everything. And there's not, you know, a definition. This guy's a power hitter. This guy steals bases. He takes the opposite field. Do you see, you know, that kind of being the future of baseball, guys, in your mold, where you can just do everything well and kind of check off all the boxes?
I think it's a generational thing. You know, a guy like Ortiz, a guy like Jeter, you know, those guys were the first guys to do it. And then 20 years later, there's other guys that do it. And then, you know, I think in 20 years from now, that there's going to be somebody out there who's going to be exactly like Mike Trout, or, you know, a guy like Mookie Betts. You know, it's definitely a generational thing, in my opinion. But, you know, a guy like Ortiz is a once in a lifetime player. You know, those guys are different breeds of animal, but it's kind of in you know, my eyes, it's a generational thing. And then, you know, hopefully within the next 20 years, there's going to be a guy that's, you know, not going to replace Altuve, but a guy like him.
That is George Springer. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. When we return, we'll do some Boston Bruins from down in Boston. Bruins getting the season started. This segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey and NHLawOffice.com. Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the show. This segment of the program brought to you by the Concord Youth Hockey Association and the Concord Capitals. Phenomenal program. Great way to get your child introduced to hockey. Great age to start getting your kid playing is about 4 years of age. That's boys and girls. More information, go to ConcordYouthHockey.org. Boston Bruins began the 2017-18 season with a victory at home against the Nashville Predators, the defending Western Conference champions, and some high hopes for this team with a young base, a veteran core, and some opportunity perhaps for the Boston Bruins to expand upon their first-round playoff exit from last year. Of course, it's been a couple of years since the Bruins were in the postseason, so some positive steps for this team. Tim Schaller is a New Hampshire native, played high school hockey at Merrimack for a year and before going into the juniors side of things, and an individual who's playing in his second year with the Boston Bruins.
So how did things change for you here in your second year with the Bruins? Has there been a different, you know, feel to you here for you here through training camp and now as we start the regular season?
Yeah, definitely a different feel. You know, I think I solidified, I don't want to say solidified, but they know what I have now this year coming into the training camp versus last year. But still in the same sense, you know, if I didn't play well this camp, you know, it could have gone in the wrong direction. So I'm happy with the way I played, and I think they are too, so hopefully I can carry that into the season.
How much do you think it helps you to, you know, constantly be fighting for, you know, your spot on the roster, so to speak? Obviously, it's not the optimal condition, but it seems like it always kind of demands the best of you because you can't, you know, let things slip or obviously, you know, things can change.
Yeah, it's a little more stressful, but, you know, it's funny. I think in practice I sometimes hold my stick a little too tight, mm-hmm. but when it comes to games, I feel way more at home, which you know, I think for some people might be different, but you know, for me, I felt a little more at ease this camp. But at the same time, you know, there's always that in the back of your mind that, you know, these young guys are here and they're not, you know, they're not going to go down without a fight.
It seemed like you really enjoyed and took in, you know, every aspect of being a Bruin this summer, whether it's being at the Hampshire Motor Speedway or doing stuff at Fenway and back home in New Hampshire. How did that feel to kind of get, you know, that first full season in where you get to, you know, the perks of being a New Hampshire guy who's on the Bruins?
Yeah, it was incredible. You know, when those opportunities came about, there was no way I could say no to them. You know, being a local guy, being a fan of the Bruins growing up, and now being able to be that Bruins guy to go to these events, it's, you know, it was pretty special. And that's the stuff I look back on, you know, when I'm older and tell my kids about and stuff like that.
It seems like, you know, the team is trying to temper expectations, where a lot of times the teams come and say, you know, our goal is to win the Stanley Cup this year, and pretty much top to bottom, it's, you know, to improve, to be better. But it seems like this is kind of a team that could surprise people based upon the good mix that you have, and if the young players find their niche and find their roles, this is a team that could probably surprise in the East.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we'll be a surprise. I think people expect a lot out of us. You know, we had a good season last year, and I think if we stayed healthy, we could have gone, you know, would have made it to the Cup. I think we had a really good team last year, and not much has changed. If anything, you know, it might even be a little better this year. So, you know, the competition within the team is nothing but healthy competition. So, you know, we're all buddies here. It's not like, you know, we're fighting against each other. We're fighting with each other. So, it's we got a good squad.
I mean, Ottawa was great, and you guys came so close to beating them in that series, and everybody forgets, you know, the four D-men that were down, and this team was, as you mentioned, very close last year, so I'm kind of surprised that the expectations aren't, you know, higher for this team. Certainly, you feel like they are in the dressing room, though.
Yeah, they definitely are. I think outside the room, people look at, you know, the young guys, and it's not so much, definitely not a rebuild, but it's, you know, trying to get young guys into the system, but, you know, we're in the room, you know, we all know what we can do in this league, and you know, we have guys who have been there before. You know, a lot of these guys won the Cup, so they know that we have a team to make it that far again, and you know, that's our expectations.
Tim, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Last year was the year that Brad Marchand became an NHL superstar, and I talked with him about the upcoming season as well.
Talking about your expectations for this team, do you feel this is a team that can win the Cup, given, you know, what you guys did in the postseason, down those defensemen, and it seems like you're building?
Yeah, we're definitely building. You know, to look that far ahead is a long ways away. A lot of things have to come together before then, but, you know, ultimately that's the end goal, and we want to build towards that. But it's a process to get there, and we have to worry about the process and how we're going to accomplish that. But I think we have the building blocks to do some damage and make a good run. But, you know, we all have to do our jobs before that, and we have to make things happen and come together as a group. But, you know, we're in a good place right now. We have a lot of good players coming in and good veterans coming back, so hopefully it all comes together for us.
Last year was the year that you became, you know, a bona fide NHL superstar. We always knew, you know, the two-way player that you were, what you meant to this club, but I think you opened a lot of eyes last year. How do you build upon that, or do you look to, you know, just replicate it?
I think the biggest thing is just to try to learn from it, and not every year is going to be a big year like that. Everything just kind of clicked and went well, but you know, it's not getting away from the fundamentals and making sure that two-way game is still there and you know, you're doing what's best for the team. So, you know, if the year's not like it was last year, but the team's doing well and we're winning, that's all that matters.
Yeah, goal scoring is the toughest thing in hockey, and that's, you know, what was obviously different last year when the goal scoring numbers were higher. Was there anything that you point to as to why that took place? Was it opportunity and circumstance, or was there, you know, something that you had different last year, particularly coming off of the World Championships where you're fabulous?
I think a big part of it is the opportunity I was given last year. You know, I played the first power play for I think over half the year there, and that really you know, really kind of jumped the confidence up a bit and allowed me to play more and get more points. I mean, I think I had 20 power play points, over 20 power play points, which if you add those to my previous numbers, I'm right around where I was last year every single year. So majority of it was just the opportunity.
You've talked about taking on more leadership role. Is that more necessary, you know, than ever, given kind of the young side of this team? There's a good veteran presence, a really good veteran presence, but there's obviously a lot of youth within this group. Do you see more of that leadership role emerging from you this year?
Yeah, a little bit. I think every year, you know, learn a little bit more, and you grow a little bit more into that role. And but we have such great leaders to learn from with Bergie and Bax and Z and Kretsch. So, you know, it's fun to follow those guys and kind of learn from them and watch them and, you know, just kind of follow their lead. So it's good to kind of grow into that role a bit more each year. But, you know, it's a lot easier when you have guys like that to lead the way.
Final thing, I mean, how awesome is it that you have that core from 2011? You mentioned Krejci and Z are all Bergie. You're all still here. I mean, what's the bond that you guys have together, given the battles you've gone through?
Yeah, it's huge. You can't explain what we've all gone through together, and it's not something that you are familiar with unless you go through it. But to have those guys as part of our elite leadership group and to know what they've gone through and the experience they have is huge, and it will be down the stretch and in those important times.
Of course, Brad Marchand has benefited, as has Patrice Bergeron, from the duo playing together for all these years. And Bergeron, of course, has been out of the lineup to begin this season. He's dealing with a lower body injury, and when he returns to the lineup, still kind of up in the air at this point in time. But Bergeron is one of the best players in the National Hockey League. He is a guy who is consistently recognized for his defensive side of the game and consistently lauded by coaches across the region for being a guy who they point to and say, hey, play like Patrice Bergeron if you're a forward. Take care of all three of the zones in hockey. And I talked with Patrice Bergeron inside the Bruins locker room.
Like, expectations are higher this year than in previous years, given you made the playoffs last year, or do you feel it's pretty comparable to what you're used to?
I mean, I think, you know, you want to get better from one year to another, so this year is no different. You know, last year we made the playoffs, and you want to improve from that. You want to be you know, I guess take a step forward. So am I going to sit here and say it's not true? I think it is. Every year you want to be a better. Pressure is, you know, I don't think it's something that you should really worry about. I think we all have high expectations of ourselves as players, and, you know, right now I'm expecting everyone to do the same and want the best every night that we step on the ice. You want to be at your best, and that's it. So that's how I feel.
Obviously, Brad had a breakout year last year on the offensive side of things, and a lot of that could be attributed to his time playing with the first power play unit. But what did you see from him last year that, you know, perhaps changed and allowed for him to evolve?
You know, I think he's just developing into an elite player. You know, he's his confidence with the puck was amazing, and, you know. Sometimes you can say the puck was going in, but yeah, that's one thing. But he was getting the chances every game, and he was making the plays every game. So I think it's just the way that he was playing with the puck, his confidence, and I think that's you know, he's always been competitive and wanting to have that puck and battle to get it back and whatnot. So that's never going to change. But I think he's just been he's just been an amazing. It took that next step to become one of the best in the league.
Coaches throughout New England will point to Patrice Bergeron and say, this is how I want a forward to play and affect the game. From your perspective, and what is the mindset that you carry into each contest, and how do you try to positively affect the game?
You know, I think it's never going to change. I think it's both. Making sure I have an impact defensively as much as I have an impact offensively. You know, you work hard during the shift when you're on the ice is to have that puck. You know, I'm not going to lie that I want to score some goals. I want to be out there on the offense. But that being said, you have to work hard defensively in order to do that. So I think it's about making sure I'm well positioned. I read the play well, and I try to feed off of my wingers as well. And you know, that's what I try to do every time I step on.
Finally, as an 18-year-old, you came to the Boston Bruins. How much does that experience, you know, help you in terms of trying to lead the other guys in the room? Like, how often do you look at, you know, a young player and see an 18-year-old Patrice Bergeron and try to give them, you know, direction that perhaps you didn't have or that you did receive that mm-hmm. that was important?
Yeah, I did receive that. You know, Martin Lapointe was one of those guys that gave me that guidance, and I'm trying to do that. You know, I'm trying to be one of those guys that's trying to help out in a sense where, you know, if you do have some questions, if you do if you're not sure what's you know, what's gonna unfold in the next few weeks or whatnot, you know, you can come to me and I'll try to help you out. I think the young guys now have especially, you know, coming off of college ranks, I think they have the maturity and they're well aware of what's, you know, what's going on, and kind of, it's kind of similar. So in a sense, I'm just here to try to, you know, share my experience of what I've dealt with, and if you do have some questions along the way, you know, they know that they can always come to me and I'll be happy to help.
That is Patrice Bergeron. You've been listening to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. For information about that great organization, I encourage you to check out ConcordYouthHockey.org. This has been The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. Have a great rest of the day, everybody.